Chapter 1. A King Comes Riding. The blare of the trumpets grew louder, like a deep golden tide surge, like the soft booming of the evening tides against the silver beaches of Volusia. The throng shouted, women flung roses from the roofs as the rhythmic chiming of silver hosts came clearer, and the first of the mighty array swung into view in the broad white street that curved round the golden-spired tower of splendor. First came the trumpeters, slim youths, clad in scarlet, riding with a flourish of long, slender golden trumpets. Next, the bowmen, tall men from the mountains, and behind these the heavily armed footmen, their broad shields clashing in unison, their long spears swaying in perfect rhythm to their stride. Behind them came the mightiest soldiery in all the world, the red slayers, horsemen, splendidly mounted, armed in red from the helmet to spur. Proudly they sat their steeds, looking neither to the right nor to the left, but aware of the shouting for all that. Like bronze statues they were, and there was never a waver in the forest of spears that reared above them. Behind those proud and terrible ranks came the motley files of the mercenaries, fierce, wild-looking warriors, men of Mu and Ka'u, and of the hills of the east and the isles of the west. They bore spears and heavy swords, and a compact group that marched somewhat apart were the bowmen of Lemuria. Then came the light foot of the nation, and more trumpeters brought up the rear. A brave sight, and a sight which aroused a fierce thrill in the soul of Kull, king of Volusia. Not on the topaz throne at the front of the regal tower of splendor sat Kull, but in the saddle, mounted on a great stallion, a true warrior king. His mighty arms swung up in reply to the salutes as the hosts passed. His fierce eyes passed the gorgeous trumpeters with a casual glance, rested longer on the following soldiery. They blazed with a ferocious light as the red slayers halted in front of him with a clang of arms and a rearing of steeds and tendered him the crown salute. They narrowed slightly as the mercenaries strode by. They saluted no one, the mercenaries. They walked with shoulders flung back, eyeing Kull boldly and straightly, albeit with a certain appreciation. Fierce eyes, unblinking, savage eyes, staring from beneath shaggy manes and heavy brows. And Kull gave back a like stare. He granted much to brave men, and there were no braver in all the world, not even among the wild tribesmen who now disowned him. But Kull was too much the savage to have any great love for these. There were too many feuds. Many were age-old enemies of Kull's nation, and though the name of Kull was now a word accursed among the mountains and valleys of his people, and though Kull had put them from his mind, yet the old hates, the ancient passions still lingered. For Kull was no Volusian, but an Atlantean. The armies swung out of sight around the gem-blazing shoulders of the Tower of Splendor, and Kull reined his stallion about and started toward the palace at an easy gait, discussing the review with the commanders that rode with him, using not many words but saying much.
"The army is like a sword," said Kull, "and must not be allowed to rust."
So down the street they rode, and Kull gave no heed to any of the whispers that reached his hearing from the throngs that still swarmed the streets.
"That is Kull, see? Valka! But what a king, and what a man! Look at his arms and his shoulders!"
And an undertone of more sinister whispering.
"Kull, ha, accursed usurper from the pagan isles."
"Aye, shame to Volusia that a barbarian sits on the throne of kings."
Little did Kull heed. Heavy-handed had he seized the decaying throne of ancient Volusia, and with a heavier hand did he hold it, a man against a nation. After the council chamber, the social palace, where Kull replied to the formal and laudatory phrases of the lords and ladies with carefully hidden grim amusement at such frivolities, then the lords and ladies took their formal departure, and Kull leaned back upon the ermine throne and contemplated matters of state until an attendant requested permission from the great king to speak and announced an emissary from the Pictish embassy. Kull brought his mind back from the dim mazes of Volusian statecraft where it had been wandering and gazed upon the Pict with little favor. The man gave back the gaze of the king without flinching. He was a lean-hipped, massive-chested warrior of middle height, dark like all his race, and strongly built. From strong, immobile features gazed dauntless and inscrutable eyes.
"The chief of the counselors, Kanu of the tribe, right hand of the king of Pictum, sends greetings and says, 'There is a throne at the feast of the rising moon for Kull. King of Kings, Lord of Lords, Emperor of Volusia.
Good, answered Kull. Say to Kanu the Ancient, Ambassador of the Western Isles, that the King of Volusia will quaff wine with him when the moon floats over the hills of Zalgara.
Still the Pict lingered.
I have a word for the king, not,
with a contemptuous flirt of his hand,
for these slaves.
Kull dismissed the attendants with a word, watching the Pict warily. The man stepped nearer and lowered his voice.
Come alone to the feast tonight, Lord King. Such was the word of my chief.
The king's eyes narrowed, gleaming like gray sword steel, coldly.
Alone?
Aye.
They eyed each other silently, their mutual tribal enmity seething beneath their cloak of formality. Their mouths spoke the cultured speech, the conventional court phrases of a highly polished race, a race not their own. But from their eyes gleamed the primal traditions of the elemental savage. Kull might be the king of Volusia, and the Pict might be an emissary to her courts. But there in the throne hall of kings, two tribesmen glowered at each other, fierce and wary, while ghosts of wild wars and world-ancient feuds whispered to each. To the king was the advantage, and he enjoyed it to its fullest extent. Jaw resting on hand, he eyed the Pict, who stood like an image of bronze, head flung back, eyes unflinching. Across Kull's lips stole a smile that was more a sneer.
And so I am to come alone.
Civilization had taught him to speak by innuendo, and the Pict's dark eyes glittered, though he made no reply.
How am I to know that you come from Kanu?
I have spoken, was the sullen response.
And when did a Pict speak truth?
Sneered Kull, fully aware that the Picts never lied, but using this means to enrage the man.
I see your plan, King,
the Pict answered imperturbably.
You wish to anger me. By Valka, you need go no further. I am angry enough, and I challenge you to meet me in single battle, spear, sword, or dagger, mounted or afoot. Are you king or man?
Kull's eyes glinted with the grudging admiration a warrior must needs give a bold foeman, but he did not fail to use the chance of further annoying his antagonist.
A king does not accept the challenge of a nameless savage, he sneered. Nor does the Emperor of Volusia break the truce of ambassadors. You have leave to go. Say to Kanu that I will come, alone.
The Pict's eyes flashed murderously. He fairly shook in the grasp of the primitive bloodlust. Then, turning his back squarely upon the King of Volusia, he strode across the Hall of Society and vanished through the great door. Again, Kull leaned back upon the ermine throne and meditated. So the chief of the Council of Picts wished him to come alone. But for what reason? Treachery? Grimly Kull touched the hilt of his great sword, but scarcely. The Picts valued too greatly the alliance with Volusia to break it for any feudal reason. Kull might be a warrior of Atlantis and hereditary enemy of all Picts, but too he was the king of Volusia, the most potent ally of the men of the West. Kull reflected long upon the strange state of affairs that made him ally of ancient foes and foe of ancient friends. He rose and paced restlessly across the hall with the quick, noiseless tread of a lion. Chains of friendship, tribe, and tradition had he broken to satisfy his ambition, and by Valka, god of the sea and the land, he had realized that ambition. He was king of Volusia, a fading, degenerate Volusia, a Volusia living mostly in dreams of bygone glory, but still a mighty land, and the greatest of the seven empires. Volusia, land of dreams, the tribesmen called it, and sometimes it seemed to Kull that he moved in a dream. Strange to him were the intrigues of court and palace, army and people. All was like a masquerade where men and women hid their real thoughts with a smooth mask. Yet the seizing of the throne had been easy. A bold snatching of opportunity, the swift whirl of swords, the slaying of a tyrant of whom men had wearied unto death, short crafty plotting with ambitious statesmen out of favor at court, and Kull, wandering adventurer, Atlantean exile, had swept up to the dizzy heights of his dreams. He was Lord of Volusia, King of Kings. Yet now it seemed that the seizing was far easier than the keeping. The sight of the Pict had brought back youthful associations to his mind, the free, wild savagery of his boyhood. And now a strange feeling of dim unrest, of unreality, stole over him, as of late it had been doing. Who was he, a straightforward man of the seas and the mountain, to rule a race strangely and terribly wise with the mysticisms of antiquity, an ancient race.
"I am Kull,"
said he, flinging back his head as a lion flings back his mane.
"I am Kull."
His falcon gaze swept the ancient hall, his self-confidence flowed back, and in a dim nook of the hall a tapestry moved, slightly.